From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to Washington Watch on this Tuesday edition. I am your host, Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're glad you could join us today. Well, Boy Scouts of America, one of the nation's oldest and largest youth organizations with 2.2 million members, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection late yesterday as the legal claims of past sexual abuse of former Boy Scouts continued to mount. And this isn't the first time the Boy Scouts have found themselves in hot water over internal corruption. John Stemberger, president of the Florida Family Policy Council and chairman of the board of Trail Life USA, a faith-based scouting alternative, will join me with his thoughts on the scandal. In our second and third blocks, I'll be joined by our own Tony Perkins, president here at FRC and host of Washington Watch, who is fresh off a trip to the southern border and will have some thoughts to share with us on illegal immigration, the border wall, and the top news of the day. And at the end of our show, a 137-page report detailing China's systematic repression of Uyghur Muslims and other minority religious faiths in western Xinjiang province has just been released, and it's based on the third set of leaked data of its kind. The report details surveillance reports on Uyghur families and lists justifications for detention. The top reason for the arrest and detention of Uyghurs in one Chinese county: having too many babies. In the ongoing and heartbreaking story of the more than 1,000 Chinese detention camps designed to imprison and torture religious minorities, I'll be joined by Dr. Elise Anderson, Senior Program Officer for Research and Advocacy at the Uyghur Human Rights Project. A reminder, as always, go to TonyPerkins.com, our podcast website. You can also find us on Apple, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast platforms. And follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. Share today's program and the information at TonyPerkins.com, where in addition to resources for today's program, we'll have information for you on FRC's Israel tour in June. Well, the Boy Scouts of America has announced that it's filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. So how did the 110-year-old organization see such a fall from grace? In one word, compromise. The Boy Scouts' strength used to be the ability to stand on principle until they caved to public pressure and tried to appease the LGBTQ community in 2013 by opening Scout membership and leadership to those identifying as LGBT. But other organizations have risen to the occasion, and chief among them is Trail Life USA, which provides biblical principles to young boys seeking the same things Boy Scouts used to pursue. So joining me now to talk about the Boy Scouts' impending bankruptcy and his own organization is former Scoutmaster, chairman of the board for Trail Life USA, and president of the Florida Family Policy Council, John Stemberger. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Sarah, it's great to be with you.
Well, I have to tell you, there is much to be said about this entire scandal. We continue to learn about allegations of sexual assault transpiring over the past 40-odd years in the Boy Scouts. But understanding that this is an organization that used to stand on principle alone, including the fact that one of the Boy Scout pledges includes the term to remain morally straight, in other words, upright in all your convictions, I didn't find this story surprising. What about you?
Yeah, so I think anybody that looks at this story and thinks that this is just about a financial bankruptcy is misguided. The real story is about a moral bankruptcy that occurred starting about a dozen years ago. And it's just sad. It starts with basically the board being infiltrated at a very high level, not by people who embrace the traditional values of scouting, but it started with these corporate executives who have been sold out to the progressive leftist LGBT agenda. And they basically made the orders to transform the organization. So that's the genesis of all this. And so it's sad because they're compromising basic youth protection. for what's in the best interest of the boys, and they're compromising it. They have a lust for being on the inside of society. They want to be in with the cultural elites. They cannot. They didn't have the courage enough to stand up and defend their own values against the cultural elite, which is veering to the left rapidly. And so because of that, they were willing to compromise basic youth protection principles, which they say is the best now, but it's still not. And it's, so it's just a moral free fall. These 300 men who have these lawsuits against them, their insurance policy, because they had a cover-up scheme and they did not disclose them, or not forthright to the police or anyone, those policies are saying, we're not going to provide coverage. And so now they're having to look to their own assets. They have about nationally about $1.7 billion in campgrounds, Philmont, the Great Scout Camp, and different facilities. So they're creating a pool of money in which to compensate the lawyers. Now, there's about four law firms that are actually advertising, if you've been abused by a scoutmaster, call us. And many states are extending the statute of limitations. So there's going to be way more than 300 when states extend the statute of limitations. There'll be hundreds and hundreds more when that happens.
Well, and we know that California, for example, has it's done just that. AB 218, for example, took effect just last month. And among other provisions, it opens a three-year look-back window, is what they're calling it, for victims to sue for damages on claims that would have ordinarily been barred by statute of limitations. So it also relaxes those age restrictions, giving victims until the age of 40 to actually file claims based on abuse, which has, like you said, opened this up. And we saw the initial sort of crack in the wall here back in 2010 when an approximately $20 million verdict against the Scouts was achieved on behalf of a man who was sexually abused as a boy in the 1980s. So, you know, we're going to be seeing, I believe, just as you said, more and more of these. But I was shocked to discover that the Los Angeles Times broke the story in 2012 and indicated that they had internal files known as the perversion files, 5,000 men on a blacklist that they had closely guarded in a trove of documents that detail all of these allegations. So it wasn't just about the moral compromise of what's happening in the addition of girls to the troop ranks, in addition to LGBTQ individuals in leadership and in the ranks. We discover on top of this that the entire schematic, at least as far as the past couple of decades have been concerned, is really sort of rotten to the core, which is, it's heartbreaking to me. This is an organization that I grew up, both of my brothers were involved in. So it really does sort of put a fine point on the fact that, as you mentioned, there is nothing beneficial to come of compromise. And if we've learned anything, we have nothing further or no further to look than Chick-fil-A, who in an effort to compromise has still been maintaining heat from the LGBTQ community. So giving a little doesn't indicate you're going to get a lot, or even a little for that matter. So I'm not surprised, I think, as you are. This is a system of sort of internal moral corruption and a series of politically correct decisions. So tell me a little bit about Trail Life USA, because you have quite a number of positions. You have an extensive and very impressive CV, I must tell you. So one of your positions was as a former scoutmaster, and you are chairman of the board of Trail Life USA. So how is your organization different?
So we are a Christian scouting movement that focuses on outdoor adventure and character and leadership. We have about 800 troops in all 50 states. Folks can go online at traillifeusa.org. and really see where the troops are located, or they could form their own troop by having just about three men, a total of five people, two of which could be women, five men, or just a handful of people can start a troop with a church or a Christian school. It's Christian scouting. I mean, we're trying to inculcate the original values of Lord Baden-Powell, coupled with a solid Christian foundation, and we're seeing it happen. I'm watching my own sons; they're turning into men as they have the ability to interact with other godly men, as we teach them principles about what it means to live in the outdoors and the beauty that comes with that. We can experience God as his creation in a way that we're putting away the technology and all that nonsense, and we're actually focusing on leadership and teamwork and relationships and how to actually get along like we used to in the old days. So it's a remarkable program. I've seen it transform my own sons and my own family, and folks can go to traillifeusa.com, .org rather, and check out where the troops are.
You know, I was really impressed, I have to tell you, John, when I went in to do some more research about Trail Life USA and the public statement that your organization issued after news of the bankruptcy. You know, we're in such a day and age, unfortunately, that we have to take into consideration things like sexual abuse and the possibility of sexual abuse when children and adults spend a lot of time together. But I found it really compelling what a level of protection and security the organization offers, because you have a lot of safety checks in place at Trail Life USA. What are some of those?
We do. Every adult has to sign a statement of faith. Every adult has to have an eyes-on relationship with the church and that ministry liaison. They have to know and approve who those leaders are. They have to go through an extensive background check. They have to take a two-hour child youth protection every year. They do that, and they renew that over and over again. And so we do everything possible. No boy is allowed with any adult alone at any time. There's a 2D policy with Scouting House as well. But I think there's just a moral foundation here that is a game changer, and it makes the program much safer and much more secure.
Well, it is one of those vastly needed, sorely needed resources in a day and age where, again, we have so few options to provide politically free environments and, more importantly, Christ-centered environments for our kids. Do you anticipate that your membership will grow as news continues to break on the sexual abuse charges and burgeoning legal settlements that are coming from the Boy Scouts of America?
Yes, we do. It's sad. I mean, most of our leaders, a lot of us came out of the Boy Scouts of America, and it's just very sad to see the left destroy this organization. Well, they've self-destructed themselves. They've internally allowed these board members to subversively take over and just hijack the entire organization. But we have seen gradual growth. We're very excited about that. You know, as people understand the Boy Scouts program, it's not safe. It really is not. You will find some troops that have really wonderful men that are operating as scoutmasters, and they don't understand the corruption at a national level. But eventually this is going to trickle down and corrupt the entire organization at a grassroots level as well.
Well, our prayer is for the expansion of your ranks in your organization. John Stenberger, former scoutmaster, chairman of the board for Trail Life USA, has been our guest today. Coming up, I'll get a chance to talk to our own Tony Perkins, who is fresh off a visit to the southern border, and he'll have some thoughts to share with us on legal immigration, illegal immigration, and the border wall, coming up next on Washington Watch.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemicalabortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com.
This is Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. A reminder to go to TonyPerkins.com, find out more information about today's guests and the program itself, share it with your friends, and you can find registration information there on the Israel trip you heard mentioned by Tony at the break. Well, we've had the good fortune of hosting a number of smart people on this show, friends on the Hill and friends who are themselves political pundits and policy analysts. And one of the hot topics of the day continues to be immigration. So what is actually going on at the southern border? Is the current administration cruel to Latin American immigrants? Is the crisis as bad as we have heard? Is the media spin that kids are in cages? Anything close to being true? Well, joining me now to talk about it is FRC's president and host of this show, Washington Watch, Tony Perkins, who is fresh off his trip to the California-Mexico border with a group of pastors hosted by Border Control. Tony, it feels great to say welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and thanks for filling in. You always do a great job, so I know the microphone is in good hands when I'm not
Thank
in.
You. Well, I want to ask you a question that I am as compelled by as I think our listeners will be, which is, does the reality of the situation at the southern border match the narrative we are being fed in the mainstream media? Fresh off the ground as you are, tell me what your insights are.
No, not at all. In fact, Sarah, this is the second time I've gone to the border. The first time several months ago, last year, I went, and what I saw was so inconsistent with what I had heard that, you know, I began to probe more, and then some pastors asked me, hey, Tony, can you take us to the border? Because, you know, our people are hearing that, you know, this administration lacks compassion and we're doing all this stuff on the border. We'd like to see it for ourselves. And so that's what precipitated the trip. I took about 15 or so pastors from California to the San Diego sector of the border yesterday. But Sarah, here's what's happened. There was at the peak in May of last year, when there were the caravans coming to the border, and there was this idea that they could continue to manipulate the process. There were those coming into the country illegally. And the snapshot at the moment was that, quite frankly, we were overwhelmed on the border. And so there were they didn't have the facilities for that. Never was created to handle, thousands of people, when on a normal day, they'll get hundreds, not thousands. Now, they've changed policies, and they've increased infrastructure. In fact, one of the things we saw yesterday was the wall, the barrier that's being built all along the southern border. I saw it in the El Paso sector. I now saw it in the San Diego sector. It's going up. The Border Patrol agents are saying it works. What it does is it drives people to the legitimate ports of entry if they have a legal reason to be here, or they want to apply for asylum, they can come through that process. But on top of that, Sarah, the president, in negotiating with the president of Mexico, has helped alleviate a lot of the pressure by the Mexican government agreeing to put troops on the southern border, on their side of the border, and also to establish a system by where those coming for asylum come to this country, file the paperwork, they go back to Mexico, they wait for their court date, and they come in, as opposed to what it was happening before.
Right.
They would come, be here, apply for asylum, and then be let loose in the country and never show back up for their court date. So bottom line is this, Sarah. The president, the policies of the Trump administration are working to stem the tide of illegal immigration at the border. Is it fixed? No. There's still a problem. But they've made great headway in spite of a Congress working against them.
Well, and the border wall itself, obviously the subject of great debate, and we've been fed a ton of imagery of the most left-wing extremes by our Democratic detractors who are in the House. Tell me, in your estimation, whether you believe this physical structure is actually going to do the job.
Yeah, it actually is, and the agents say that it is. And what happened before is we had where there were barriers, some of it was mesh fencing, and it was about, in some cases, 8 feet high. What they're actually putting up is a double-walled barrier with, kind of neutral ground in between that is 30 feet high. And they're saying, there's just a psychological effect of trying to climb over something that's 30 feet high. Number one, it's difficult to do. But two, he said they've had a few that have tried it. They got to the top and said, you know what, I'm not so sure I want to do this. And so they had to call for help. But the reality is it is working. But again, it's not going to solve everything. We have an underlying problem in our immigration law. We've not had the comprehensive immigration reform. In fact, we've had none. The president, again, despite the opposition from Congress, from the House, from the Democratic Party, is putting up the physical barrier. He found a way to do it. He's doing it. It's working. Now, the administration is also soon going to be rolling out a comprehensive immigration reform package that fixes some of the underlying problems that we have, because our system is not working and it's not fair. But again, what we've seen in this administration is America first. And so, yes, we're going to let people into the country, but it's got to be good for America. There got to be people that want to come to this country to make it a better country, be a part of making America great, and not be a part of pulling America apart.
So we got about a minute left before the break, but we're going to hold over until the next segment. I want to talk a little bit about the great op-ed that you wrote talking about the American rule of law. That was a year ago. It was pretty prescient when it comes to what is actually happening at the border. And it harkens to some principles that I would love to talk with you about after the break. And I've got another story that I think you're going to have some thoughts on. So those of you who are listening, stick with us, and we'll continue our discussion with Tony Perkins right after the break on Washington Watch.
this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry sitting in for Tony Perkins, and I've got him on the line. We're talking illegal immigration, fresh off of his visit, his second visit to the southern border. And Tony, last year you wrote a fabulous op-ed in the Washington Times about the need to protect America's national home. This ran a year ago and really set up the discussion for where we're having now, because your discussion, your examination of what makes this nation unique, what makes it excellent, I think really bears some expansion. So really, in your estimation, this is a question about the rule of law that separates us from other nations, isn't it?
It absolutely is, Sarah, and that's what makes America attractive. I mean, why are all these people coming to America? They were coming during the years of President Obama, when there was the moral implosion in the country, the economy was on the rocks. Mm-hmm. They were still coming. Why? It's because America is still, even at its worst, is better than most places in the world because of the rule of law. And this is the irony of this. Those that are coming illegally, and it's like, it's for, this applies to so many things. When we want something enough to destroy the characteristics that make it unique, It's no longer unique. And so that's what, when we break the rule of law, when we deny the rule of law, we tear down what makes America unique and special and the blessing that it is to the world. And so it's essential that we protect that rule of law. And it's fascinating in the conversation with the border agents yesterday. And by the way, many of these men and women are believers. You know, I'm not going to say all of them are, but I've encountered many on the border who are believers. And they take great pride in their work, as we all should as believers. We're to do everything unto the glory of God. They are there to do a job, and that is to uphold the laws of this country when it comes to people coming in the country illegally. But they're also burdened with compassion. And so this idea that we've got these people who are mistreating people on the border, I listened to the stories. In fact, one who was in close contact with the agents that was present when OAC said that, they were making them drink out of toilets. There was just completely opposite. That was never said. Mm. And so she corrected that narrative yesterday when we were talking about this, that, look, that was never said. That kind of stuff, it hurts us because we are torn by the families coming into this country, what they're going through, what we see, the trafficking. And many of them even volunteer on their own time to work with ministries that help trafficked people, that work with those that are being sex trafficked. And so, you know, they bear a burden, and they're doing their very best. They're upholding what makes America great: law, justice, but also compassion and mercy. And that's one of the things in our system that has to be fixed. In our, you know, I've advocated with the president, with this administration, to make sure that we have asylum. Those seeking refuge because of persecution can find it, but they can't be a loophole. And historically, that's been a loophole: people to come into the country claiming that, then disappearing into the shadows of society. So I commend this administration on what they're trying to do. They're making progress, but we still have a ways to go.
Yes, yes, we do. I heard you mention earlier, and this is a perfect segue into a story I want to get your opinion on, about compromising the character of something that is great ultimately destroys the fabric of who it is or what it is. And we talked earlier in the program, as you know, with John Stemberger, who is chairman of the board for Trail Life USA. And news has just broken that the Boy Scouts will, in fact, be filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. They simply cannot meet the onslaught of sexual abuse allegations and settle with all of the victims because there are so many. And this would seem to me that it's sort of a natural result of moral compromise. What's your take on that?
Well, you are absolutely right. It is a case study in the effects of moral compromise. In fact, this is the first time I'll say this publicly, but actually working on a book on the Boy Scouts as a case study in compromise and where it leads, because it is a case study that all organizations should look at. Look, it's 110 years old, a storied institution.
Yes.
That went all the way to the United States Supreme Court to be able to define their own membership and to protect that. And they won. They won at the Supreme Court, only to compromise in the culture because of the external pressure. And you can never appease those who want to transform you into something that you are not, and to reject and abandon your core values. And that's exactly what they did. And they are not even a shell of who they used to be, as they've lost their membership. They're no longer Boy Scouts, they're Scouts, because they allow girls into the Scouts. And so their whole core mission to train up young boys through that journey into manhood, giving them those core moral values, all that's been lost. And the real loser, Sarah, are the boys of America.
Yes, they are. Well, you heard it here first. A new book is on the way from Tony Perkins. Tony, do you have a release date yet you can share with us?
No, not yet. Still, we're just in the process.
Well, good news. Good news from Family Research Council's President Tony Perkins, who's joined us today off his trip to the southern border. We will be right back on Washington Watch as we continue to track the story of developing human rights violations for the Uyghurs in China. I will be joined by Dr. Elise Anderson, who will have her take on the story and some data to show us next.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. TonyPerkins.com, our podcast website. Find us on SoundCloud, Apple, Stitcher, what you use for your regular podcast listening. You'll find Washington Watch, so go there. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah P. Perry or Tony at T. Perkins. Well, we have tracked China for many years. We are suddenly now, I think, like the rest of the population, beginning to awaken to the fact that the widespread human rights abuses and what can only be described as a form of ethnic cleansing is worse than we ever thought it could be. Newly leaked Chinese government records just out reveal detailed surveillance reports on Uyghur families, a religious minority in China. They give us more insight into Beijing's list of justifications for mass detentions and mistreatment of Uyghur Muslims in China in more than 1,000 detention camps. Joining me now to talk about it is Senior Program Officer for Research and Advocacy at the Uyghur Human Rights Project, Dr. Elise Anderson. Dr. Anderson, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me.
So I would like to begin, if I can, about a description of what the Uyghur Human Rights Project does.
Thank you so much. Yes, so the Uyghur Human Rights Project, my organization, most simply put, we do advocacy for Uyghurs and other peoples in what we call East Turkestan, which is also known as Xinjiang or the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region in China. In addition to advocacy, supporting grassroots advocacy by Uyghur diaspora members around the world, we also do human rights research, and we publish a regular series of reports based on firsthand evidence, interviewing, and other documentary evidence.
So in this particular report, now we've seen a couple of these leaked reports, and I'm curious as to the origins, and I'll get that in a second, but I'm curious as to precisely how this report came to be, where it was leaked from. It's the third type of data leak on human rights abuses and specifically detention in detention camps They were called, have been called, continue to be called re-education camps by Chinese officials, government authorities, but we know them to actually be detention camps. How did this data get leaked, and how did your organization get a hold of it to actually synthesize and analyze it?
That's a great question. Thank you. So this document was, as best we know, leaked by the same government official back in China who leaked documents that were analyzed and reported on by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists back at the end of 2019. So this is part of that same leak, although it is a different type of document, which I think we can get to in a minute, than any of the documents in previous leaks were. Our organization got our hands on this because Abdulveli Ayup, who is a Uyghur in exile in Norway, he is a linguist and language activist. He received the document from other members of the Uyghur diaspora who were trying to get it out. And he approached us and asked if, you know, we would like to be one of many people, many organizations working to, you know, verify the authenticity of the document, but also understand what it was telling us.
Now, this is a fair volume of information. It's 137 pages. Your organization has meticulously combed through the data and has synthesized it for us. So let's start with the big picture. What is included in this document? What type of a document is it? And then let's go into some of the specifics of what's actually included.
Okay, great. Yes. So this document is a spreadsheet containing detailed information about 311 individuals, all ethnically Uyghur, from a particular county. It's called Qarakash County, and it's located in the Khotan Prefecture of the Uyghur Autonomous Region. And so what this spreadsheet does, it's actually titled People Who Are Relatives of People Who Have Gone Abroad and Not Returned.
So oh, wow.
Yes, right. Very specific subset of people from Qarakash County who are interned, have been interned in some sort of center, and also happen to be related to someone who is abroad. And so then what the document actually does with that very and limited set of people is over a series of 667 different entries, again, for only 311 individuals, it records a tremendous amount of detail about each person. So you have a number assigned to each individual, and a case number we can think about. Then you get the person's name, the center where they're detained, their Chinese national ID number, the administrative offices that are responsible for them at the sub-district and then community level. You also learn about the reasons that they are in detention. Then subsequent cells will tell us what level of management they're under, whether it's regular, strict, maximum. But the most detailed column in each row contains information about what the document calls, quote, three circles. Now, that's kind of a strange term. It doesn't tell you a lot at face value. What it means is that the people who have compiled this document, who are bureaucrats, other people working for the Chinese state,
right?
They have detailed information about the family circles, social circles, and what they call religious circles of each Uyghur who is in this list. So they record details about three generations of family. And then they talk about people's friends and neighbors, right? Who are they? What is their ID number? Where do they live? Is that person in good standing? Is that person in okay behavior? Then when they get to the religious circle part, they have recorded information like, you know, this person prays regularly. He also prays after meals. He celebrates the two main religious holidays that Uyghurs have, and on and on and on. And then the final row of each column, or in the final row of the document, there is an evaluation. where the authorities have determined, based on all the information they've gathered, whether they think that someone should stay in detention or be released from it.
Oh, wow.
Tremendous amount of information in this document. Yes.
So these are what we would call, for example, and what I've seen referred to in the writings of your organization as the justifications list, right? So you have all of the data, different cross sections, a schematic of information about everything from family connections to religious habits that sort of segment Uyghur Muslims into sections that sort of grade them as to detention and or release from detention, which I have to tell you, Elise, as I'm talking to you, the hair is standing up on my arms because it is really an unbelievable form of totalitarianism that is striking to someone who has always lived in the United States, who has no experience with this kind of ethnic cleansing. And I really think, and I'd love your perspective, that that's not an overstatement, that this is a form of ethnic cleansing.
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely agree. And I was very happy in the opening moments, right, of this segment when you introduced this as, you know, widespread human rights abuses and an issue of ethnic cleansing. Because what China says is, oh, we are, you know, rooting out religious extremism, and we're stopping people from being terrorists and, you know, whatever else they want to say, drawing on kind of Islamophobic sentiment. But right. What this document actually tells us is that very few of the reasons that people have been sent away to internment have anything to do with religion whatsoever, right? The thing really that everyone shares in common is that they're Uyghur in this list.
Right.
And the broader campaign, also another way to draw this point out about ethnic cleansing, is to say that, you know, these camps are but one part of the widespread human rights abuses in this region. And these camps are only one part of this broader campaign. There are a lot of other things going on as well that all point toward ethnic cleansing and cultural genocide.
So your organization's called on the UN Human Rights Council and the UN Security Council to act on what's clearly a growing body of conclusive evidence of these mass atrocities. And we know it's not just Uyghurs and other minority Muslims. We also have talked about on this program that Christians have also been persecuted. They have also ended up in these concentration camps. Clearly, the People's Republic of China accepts no ideological or theological quarter. Do you feel as if the world has sufficiently woken up to the extent of how bad this problem is? And if not, what can an individual like me or the listeners to this program, what can we do to help effectuate change? Because as you understand full well, the Chinese government is the 8,000-pound gorilla, not only as concerns policy, politics, geopolitical dealings, but as concerns its ability to leverage technological implications at a granular level and to affect the lives of ordinary everyday people. So what can we do, Elise?
That is an excellent question, and it's something that our organization loves to share with people, what you can do. In fact, our website, I'm going to tell listeners a lot of
things that
you can all do. But I will also preface it by saying that our website, which is very easy, it's UHRP.org, has a page titled What You Can Do, right? And so if you can't write all of these down or remember, you know, the things I'm going to suggest, I strongly encourage that listeners go there.
Good.
To see what we can do. But yes, so what can we do? The world's response is growing. I feel like, and our organization feels as though, you know, more and more people, we're seeing more and more media coverage of what's happening, more knowledge. It's still not enough. And one of the main reasons it's not enough is that Beijing is buying silence outright silence from some governments and some administrations, and from others, it's buying inaction, right? And that's causing a lot of problems on the government action and multilateral institution levels, right? But what individuals can do is continue to put pressure on our own elected officials, right? So in the United States, we're talking about our representatives, our senators. Outside the United States, you know, people are going to want to be contacting their members of parliament. For U.S.-based listeners, what you can do is ask your senators right now to support the bipartisan Uyghur Human Rights Policy Act of 2019. So that is Senate Resolution S-178. Back in December, the House version of that bill passed 406 votes, yes, and only one vote nay. That bill has now gone to the Senate for reconsideration. We feel very confident that it's going to pass. This is one of the truly bipartisan issues in Washington right now, but we need it actually to go back up for consideration in the Senate, right? So get in touch with your senators. That's one great way to affect change. Another thing that you can do is share our organization's briefings and reports. So we have freely and openly available on our website a number of materials that you can use to educate yourself more, but also friends, family members, other members of, you know, your church community, your neighborhood, whatever sorts of organizations and groups you're part of. We encourage you to use our briefings, use our reports, learn what you can, and then, you know, maybe you can turn around and host an event of some sort, or simply share those reports with other people.
Go ahead with students, because we have some that listen, and we have a number of interns from universities across the country who'll be anxious for this.
Right, absolutely. I strongly encourage students to, you know, reach out to other college students across the United States. There are signs that a nascent student movement is forming, right? And I think there could be wonderful possibilities to create a network of organizations on college campuses across this country, right, who are advocating for this particular issue and just for human rights in China more broadly as well. There are also campaigns such as No Rights, No Games 2022 to put pressure on the International Olympic Committee and the National Olympic Committee. As your listeners might know, the 2022 Winter Olympics are slated to be held in Beijing. And we want to say, no, a country that is holding millions of people in internment should not be allowed to host the Olympics, right? So there are campaigns like that you can be a part of.
Elise, I unfortunately have got to cut you off. Dr. Elise Anderson, it's been my joy to talk to you about this incredibly impressive and pressing issue, Senate Resolution S-178. Go to her website as well, uhrp.org. This has been Washington Watch, our website, tonyperkins.com, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.